outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, look who called in today. My goodness. Hello, Kyle.
Wyoming is back in the house.
Wow, Kyle Rice gave me a call. Say, I got something to talk to you about, so we thought we'd jump into it. And this is a... I thought it was a holiday weekend, but you've been working all day, Kyle.
Yeah, I've been working all weekend. We've been at continuing education training.
What kind of school district works on President's Day, man? I thought everybody on the planet got that off, government-wise.
Nope. In fact, the entire panhandle.
So you don't have a union. Is that what you're saying?
Either that or they're not doing a very good job.
But you don't know which. After working a year and a half, don't have a clue if I have a union or not or nothing. Or
Counselors don't operate in the union.
We've had
our own entity.
We've had a crazy weekend. We've had a one granddaughter in dancing competition all weekend in Burbank. So we've been running back and forth there trying to, since I can't make many of them this year, we've tried to catch all those while I'm home. And then my grandson had a birthday yesterday, and old Zoe's got one today. Our big old dog turned four today. So, and then Sarah's car shopping. Her car is kind of pushing the envelope. So, Matt, just way too much this weekend. I don't think I controlled 1 minute of my time from, of course, going to your granddaughter's dancing, I guess, is a deal. But you're spending a lot of time standing around a convention center for very little.
Now, was she part of a dance production or individual, solo, group? Like, what type of dance are we talking
about? Yeah,
both.
She belongs to a studio in her hometown here that competes nationally in dance. And she does two group dance things, and she does one solo. And so she got some gold medals, but near as I could tell, they were giving them out pretty freely. So I don't think everybody got one, but a lot of people got them. So platinum and something else was the higher bit. But this is her first year, and these other kids have been dancing since they're like 5 or 6. She's 12.
So oh, wow.
She's
okay.
Coming late to the party, but doing pretty well. So she was a soccer girl till she broke her arm and couldn't play soccer anymore. Then she got into dance. So now we're dancing.
So I'm assuming that she's not doing backflips and turns and twists on the floor and handstands and that kind of thing yet.
Yeah, she's doing some of that. Kind of dance? No, she's doing some of that stuff. She got the old scorpion down, you know, grabs her back foot over the top of her head, which not everybody can do. So she's a pretty flexible gal. So she's
okay.
She's doing some serious stuff. And then we had a little boy playing basketball and baseball, and well, it was just that kind of weekend, but it was fun with family, fun to be home, fun to hang out with them and all good stuff. But I've got about 5 million things sitting on my desk that are woefully behind, and I've got to leave Thursday for Oklahoma. So it's one of those crazy weeks.
Entirely sure how you do it, especially, I mean, I thought you were moving towards retirement, but it doesn't sound like that's the case at all. Sounds like you're amping up.
This is retirement, Kyle.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
This is what it looks like. None of it pays, so it's got to be retirement, right?
Well, at least that's exciting, though, coming from a younger audience, knowing that life doesn't get boring after you, quote unquote, retire.
Yeah. Got called the end of the last week by an Oklahoma reporter for the Oklahoman, and they did a big article on polarization and the little bump on the conference I'm doing in Edmond next week. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
They didn't get all the facts right, but well, they're still talking about the book, so who knows.
Well, and it was interesting. I was actually in a conference. One of my trainings today was about how to merge the polarization that's occurring in a lot of the smaller town schools out here in Nebraska and Wyoming regarding the LGBTQ plus community.
Yep.
And so that was a very interesting dialogue today. We had administrators and counselors and teachers, and they were all discussing some of the challenges and things that are being faced there too. So
yeah, transgendered bathrooms are huge right here in this neck of the woods. So right in California at the moment, figuring out how best to do that. So yeah. I guess They've changed that X, LGBTQX, to a plus, huh? They rotated that X a little bit.
Yes, LGBTQAI plus is the current most up-to-date acronym for the LGBTQ community. So.
I'm not even going there. I'm not. I'm just not today. I'm too tired. So.
One of the administrators said, I can't say all those letters in a row, so I'm just going to go with alphabet soup. Was their response.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's always going to be appreciated by other people, however.
Yeah, I don't think that would go over very well.
Somehow all those letters have become critically important, and it would have been nice if we could have just had a word, you know, a word to talk about that. But
yeah, that's
it would
true.
Spell something. Well, it doesn't even And it's tough to pronounce. Then you put a plus at the end and you haven't got a letter there at all. So,
well, that's because currently there's 71 gender identifications.
I've heard that, which is a podcast for another day.
Yes, it is.
Maybe. I just can't figure out how there are 71. I mean, the world just go crazy, right? You'd think, you know, 7 or 8 would suffice when plumbing wise there's only 2.
Well, the interesting part was I was actually the first session that I was in was a renowned researcher, marriage and family therapist, has been doing research on the differences between the male and female mind for 30 years, specifically in neuropsychology.
Yeah.
And so I went from a neuropsychologist, marriage and family therapist who adamantly states that there is male brain and female brain. And then obviously there's a whole spectrum of people that fall on a continuum in that. But he very, very adamantly stated that there's either a male brain or female brain and had lots of neuropsychology evidence to back that up. And so that was interesting going from one to the other.
That is interesting because it's obviously not then brain function. It's obviously perception and more psychological factors, I guess, than biological ones.
Yeah, it was very, you know, the really interesting part was that they saw the – there's extreme differences in the male and female brain up until the late teens, early 20s. And then they start to – the brains actually start to look a lot more similar to one another. Hmm. And neuropsychologists say that that's because if our brains didn't adapt that way, there's no way we would get married and reproduce.
There's no way we would stay married and communicate.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. There we go.
It's hard enough if they are becoming somewhat merged. But after 45 years, I can still be surprised by Sarah and some of the things she's thinking. And yeah, just go, wow, that's where we are. Okay, let's go down that road, see where that ends up. Yeah, but well, that's maybe a talk for another day. But the issues are real. I think people who are unsettled gender-wise – or have settled in a non-conformity-based gender identifier. I mean, obviously the situations are real, the needs are real. Whether we're addressing it the best way or not is an issue for another day, maybe.
Yeah.
But my heart goes out to the families that this impacts. I hear from quite a few, quite honestly, who have kids or whatever dealing with some of this stuff. So.
And it's interesting because this kind of transitions about what I actually contacted you to talk about today.
Go for it,
Kyle. I was actually having a conversation with one of my students, and we were talking about the conversations, the internal conversations that we have in our head. This individual wakes up every day with the internal message of, I am a failure and I am worthless. Hmm. That's the starting thought of their value system. That's the start of their internal dialogue with almost every single day.
Wow.
Yeah, it just...
I got email from someone last week, a female abused growing up, now older, adulthood in her 40s, and has the same thing. Feels like a worthless piece of whatever every day. That's what she's got to climb out of. It's, you know, I hear you talk about the self-conversation thing at the lab. I never have that silent conversation in my head with me.
Really?
No, it's always outside. It's always, I'm always talking out loud. I talk to me all the time, but it's, I don't just sit down and do it in my head. Man, I'm right out there talking to me about various things. So
you don't have like an internal commentator that when you're observing a situation, there's almost like this little guy that's sitting on your shoulder giving feedback on what you're observing.
No, I have observations about what I'm observing, but I don't feel like I'm talking about those with anybody. I'm just having them.
Okay.
If I want to talk about them with me, I'm going to do that later when I talk out loud. I mean, watch me on a walk. People got to go, that boy's weird. Cause I will, it will look like somebody's walking alongside me, but I will talk through lots of stuff. But rarely just do I have that two-way thing in my head because I never have done it. So when I'm observing things, I'm just observing and thinking and noting things, but I'm not arguing with me or talking to me in that sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, see, and this, like for me, this is one of the things that I work with clients all the time on is the context of their internal dialogue. And so, like, for example, I was working with a client at one point, and they had a very, very, very negative self-concept of one another. And they were wondering why they could not receive a compliment from somebody. So we had done this exercise in class, and I asked them to write down five things that they really liked about themselves, and then five things they would change about themselves. And this person couldn't write a single thing down about themselves that they liked. Not a single one.
Yeah, Sarah went through that same thing, and she had master's level classes for guidance and counseling. The classroom was the same way. So a lot of people couldn't come up with one or more than one.
And see, what I've found, at least talking with people, is that often there's this war going on, an internal conversation that's going on, that there's these different messages. And some of those messages are good, and some of those messages are negative. And we as an individual have the opportunity to either choose to agree with the positive ones or choose to agree with the negative ones. And when I've worked with clients, one of the things that I've described with them, especially the ones that have the really negative self-talk, is look, you're choosing to side and agree with these horrible statements about who you are as a person. You're choosing that message to agree with that message. And so as long as you continue to allow that to be the authority on your value and your heart, there's no way that any other voice can get in.
Well, why do you think they agree? I mean, is it something that you say, okay, I'm going to choose the bad thoughts, or do the bad thoughts sound real?
Oh, often these negative conversations get started with a trauma. So right. Either something bad happens and a message comes in about their value, and in the moment it feels right. And then we just keep having these life experiences, and then we can either choose that message either has the opportunity to be reinforced in our mind about us,
yep,
or we can choose a different message about who we are.
And it's often self-fulfilling, right? If I begin into a negative frame of mind, then I interpret every action coming at me as confirmation of that bias.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So something bad, well, of course it happened to me. I'm a worthless piece of whatever. And then something good happens, but you can dismiss that because that was just a fluke. That was just luck. That didn't really count. And any of us that goes through life looking for evidence of one thing or another are going to be able to prove it in the long haul, right?
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. Couple that with trauma or sexual brokenness. In the running back and forth to Burbank for my granddaughter this weekend, Sarah and I were listening to a podcast, and one of the things that they touched on was the predatory behavior of males toward women is their ability. We're seeing some of this in the Weinstein trial and saw it in the Bill Cosby trial. They tend to target women who are most vulnerable, have some abuse in their past or some promiscuity in their past or whatever, for two reasons. One, they're more vulnerable and it's easy to recognize that. And two, if they ever do come forward, they're easy to discredit. They're easy to pull up stuff from their past that says you shouldn't believe this gal because she's a troubled person. And so that stuff becomes self-perpetuating. If I'm talking to myself about damaged goods, and I think the other thing we've got going in there, if the enemy is the accuser, then, man, his thoughts are – Tracy did a great thing on that. We're talking about some of the gay lesbian stuff of a little boy has an experience. The enemy whispers in his ear something. He begins to take that on as an identity. And, you know, she's not saying that that's always what happens, but could that not be what happens? And knowing what I know about darkness and knowing what I know about the enemy, I think it's for all of us. You know, when the thought comes from darkness and if you embrace it as true – you'll eventually embrace it as your conclusion about yourself. You won't even see the enemy behind it. You won't see a bad person behind it. You won't hear your father's abusive voice anymore. You're just going to think that's a true statement about myself. And man, that's a big dark hole.
I love that you brought that up because I completely agree with you. And that's actually a point that I was going to bring up because I think especially there's been a couple of clients that I've worked with that it was absolutely revolutionary to them to think that that negative thought might have come from the enemy, might have come from the thief, that it didn't. Because the assumption is that came from me or it came from – like it's – we start blaming ourselves instead of saying, yeah, there's a thief out there that wants to steal, kill, and destroy everything about us, everything that God's created in us that's good.
And usually most Christians have lost sight of that too. It's not just the world doesn't believe in a devil anymore. Because I don't think a lot of Christians believe in a personal God anymore. It's God's kind of behind all the rituals and knowledge and truth and things I'm supposed to do. But God's not personally communicating with me. Now, a lot of Christians still don't believe that, which is shocking to me. And if you don't have that, then obviously you don't have a devil doing it. And so then your conclusions are, well, if that's the thought I had and it keeps seeming to demonstrate itself, then obviously it's true. It's not the voice of the enemy. It's just true. And then what do you do if that's, if you're worthless, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
If you're worthless, I guess that's where people end up, you know, suicidal or end up in depression and despair. That's not the only cause. So I don't need all those letters saying it can also be caused by other things. I know that. I'm just saying that that point of view, if I am worthless and that's the truth of it, that's not just, oh gosh, I feel like I'm worthless sometimes, but in fact, I am worthless. There's just nowhere to go from there. I don't know how you begin. How do you encourage clients there to get some traction? Do you just...
Well, that's where part of it is helping the clients identify there is another voice, that it's not just their voice, and that they, as the individual, actually have the power to choose what conversation or what statement they choose to agree with. And so, because often in those situations where those agreements really lay a foundation in our hearts with the enemy, is in a moment where we don't feel lovable. It's in a moment where we're vulnerable, where we have experienced pain. And so then it feels right to us. And yet it's totally the thief coming in to try to put our hearts in a prison that we then lock the gate on and hold the gate shut. I saw this illustration one time, and it was this beautiful painting that a person did. It was, they were in a cage, they were in a prison, and the door was unlocked, but the person was reaching through the door and holding on to the bars, holding the door closed, because they believed that it was that truth was the truth about them. And yet God was reaching out to them and asking, let go of the bars, let my truth in, let my love in, let my conversation in. But as long as they continue to choose that agreement that was made in pain, God's voice couldn't get in.
I don't think, now tell me about, I mean, I don't know about your clients. I know people I pray with and help with through things like this. To say it's just a choice and you can make a better choice for a lot of people just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Does it in your mind? Are you able to help people with just say, okay, you've been choosing these bad thoughts, choose better thoughts?
No, it's not just that simple. It's not, good. Oh, no. Just,
I'm not funny.
You can just choose this and you'll be fine. No, it's not that by any means. But for some people, when they've been in a position where they've felt powerless, if you're able to give them the fact that you do have choice, you do have strength to make a decision here, that you're not just a victim to this, that can be incredibly empowering for them. But there also has to be some healing that comes into those agreements. And one of my favorite stories is I was working with a client and they had experienced significant trauma in their life. And we went through this session where he and I were just talking, and I was like, okay, I want you, he wrote a poem, and I said, okay, I want you to visualize where you're at in this poem. And so he's like, man, I'm down in this dark hole, and I'm looking up, and all the people around me, like all the people that I love are looking down into this hole, but nobody's reaching out in harm to me. And I said, okay. And so this person felt very betrayed by family, very betrayed by friends. I said, okay. And I was like, all right, so what I want you to do is I want you to read through this poem a little bit more. And then I wanted you to ask Jesus where he's at in this picture. And so we're processing through this a little bit. And then the guy just starts weeping. And I was like, where's Jesus? And he's like, he's down in the hole underneath me, pushing me towards the top of the hole.
That's cool.
And it was just, I mean, just such an incredible image. And for him, that was that moment where God's healing reframed that painful situation. And he saw that Jesus was in the midst of it with him and that he wasn't powerless, that there was actually a father that was in the midst of that, in the pain with him, helping move him towards greater healing.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that it's tough for people sometimes to take a compliment or even figure out one for themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's true in these kinds of situations. I think it's true of most people. When you just give a out of the blue compliment to somebody, particularly a Christian, it's almost always deflected. Oh, just praise Jesus, or just, you know, it's not me, it's him, it's, you know, whatever. They rarely do people just go, thank you, it's very sweet of you to recognize that, or it's, I appreciate you saying something, like it's very encouraging. And yet there's no greater way for us to encourage each other than the kind of affirmation. I know for me, when I connect with a lot of people on the road, even which just very briefly with people who have this overture of worthlessness in their life or, You know, God can't possibly love them. Because if you don't have worth, then how can you be loved? Right? Mm. Love's not pity. Love's not, okay, you disgusting little worm from God. I created you, so I'm going to love you anyway. I hold to the view that the reason God loves humanity is because when he looks at us, he can find none for whom he doesn't have affection. Mm. It's Octavia Spencer in the shack looking up going, you know, is there anybody you're not especially fond of? And she kind of looks up in the ether. No, I don't believe there is. And it's kind of like, it's not, okay, I'm especially fond of everybody. That's a conclusion I made and I'm applying it. But God loves from the individual to the whole. So it's love one another. It's not love everybody. Even our experience of love is not, I love the whole world. That doesn't mean anything. If you don't love the next person in front of you, saying you love the world is kind of bizarre. But if you can't sense love, you can't appreciate love if you don't consider at some level that you're worthy of the Father's love. Not worthy by performance, not worthy because I've got it all right, not worthy because I'm a great human being, just worthy because I'm a creation of God and he made me for something special. And that may have gotten robbed from me by various things. I may have squandered it by various choices I've made in my life. But the inner worth of who I am as God's creation is not changed by those things. Mm. We're still worthy of love. And if you don't see yourself as worthy of love, then you don't have anywhere to move. And so I think that revelation of Jesus at the bottom of the pit or God in some way, and that's often, I think, through people like me or like you. The first time someone who really deals with a horrible self-esteem issue or really deals with some brokenness internally, the first taste they have of real love and worth will probably come through another human being. That's how God will make that inroad. I mean, it'd be nice if he just rend to the sky and show up in front of them and go, man, I love you to death. And he can do that. But it's often if he did it, people would miss it anyway. They would they would run and hide under a rock because it would terrify them. Yeah. And so God, often I think the importance of God saying, listen, I want to love through you in a way that makes people feel entirely safe. This one person I was dealing with last week who has suffered abuse by her dad and then numerous times going to male counselors have come on to her. Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, and she's gone with it at times because she's if you feel like you're unworthy of it and you're getting attention from somebody you respect, it's so easy to give in. But then that redefines what a scumbag you are to her.
Yeah.
And so it just tumbles in on itself. And man, I've met her once. We've exchanged some emails. But every time I come back there with it, you're a delightful woman. It's something I probably wouldn't say to a woman unless Sarah were in the room, if I were with them personally. Yeah. But I think that a father figure from someone who is completely sexually safe for them in the sense that nothing's going to happen there, no temptation here, I'm not even thinking about that. But the ability to, I know for my daughter and my grandgirls, the ability to love them extravagantly without a sexual overtone is incredibly important. But
yeah.
You and I know men are scum. There's so many, you know, how many stories of pastors, counselors end up crossing propriety lines, which now when you could have done something really, really good by loving them without that, now you've done the really, really horrible thing of feeding their own brokenness and insecurity for your own momentary gratification. And it may just be weakness, you know, sin in your life you haven't dealt with yet or whatever. But it's so damaging.
Yeah.
If you can offer a child, a woman, a safe place without any of that, I think you've done incredible good. But all the safeguards now we have to have in our society because men can't seem not to.
Yeah.
They can't seem to stop from crossing. And they may not, you know, for months and years with most patients, and then one comes in and something gets going. And instead of running out of that room and getting screaming for help so I don't injure somebody else, they give into it. And that's how I think that worthlessness keeps building up for people. And it may have started with the harsh words of a father. It may have started with the abuse of a father. It happens to boys, too, where you're just never good enough for the people around you. So you conclude that you just don't have an inherent sense of worth. Yeah, I love just getting the self-talk shifted. I know in a lot of stuff that God's done in Sarah, self-talk's been very important for her, just to hear what she's not always noting while she's driving around in her car, you know, mm-hmm. but things that she's saying to herself, if she made a mistake or didn't quite say the right thing in the right place or whatever, is far worse than any human being ever deserves. And when you realize, mm-hmm. yeah. one of the things I've said to Sarah when she gets, and she's doing that far less these days, which is awesome, but I would say you never talk to me that way. You don't talk to your daughter that way. You don't talk to any of us the way you talk to yourself. And that may be a good way for some people to see when you're doing that, when you're talking to yourself in a way you don't talk to other people, you might really check yourself and ask, is this the right thing? Is this me, or is this the enemy using my vocal cords or my mental capacities to rake me over the coals? Because that's what he does so well.
And that's the hard part, is it's so deceptive. It's so subtle and it's so deceptive and it's so hard, especially if it's a voice or a message that we've been hearing for a long time. It's so hard to untangle that from what God's trying to say, what our true value is, the messages of the people around us who are trying to express love to us. It's so hard to untangle that because it's so subtle.
I had someone say last week, the devil doesn't have to be all that creative because the same stuff always works over and over again. You're just underlining that. He was talking about Adam and Eve in the fall and, you know, God can't be trusted. That's the lie of the garden. And he's still using that lie because it works so well. People.
Yeah.
It just, okay, it doesn't look like it. I didn't get what I wanted. I had a guy this week write me about a thing in his own prayer life. He was disappointed, something he prayed for and didn't get. And at the end of it, he was just saying, I don't understand. You know, I don't understand what I didn't do to get what I was praying for. And, you know, I'm hearing him going, oh, so you have a quid pro quo God. And that got him really thinking. It was just the right thing to say, because he's going, wow, you made me step back and going, whoa, no, I don't have that kind of God, but I'm acting as if I do, because some of our stuff on prayer is, and whether it's been taught overtly or not, most people who are really praying intensely for something they're very desperate about really believe there's the right wording here, or the right kind of agreement, or the right number of people to agree with me. There's something here that if we'll just cross that line, God will be committed to do it. And if we don't cross that line, then I haven't done enough for God. To me, that's just such an unwholesome way to pray.
Yeah.
And will always lead you to be down on yourself, because most of what I begin to talk to God about, he has a much better idea and plan than I do. So if I'm evaluating on, did I get what I wanted from him? Then yeah, I'm going to be disappointed. And if I'm going to judge me by that, then I'm back to the worthless thing again. Exactly the same thing.
Or you're going to judge God by that too. Because if your prayers aren't answered in the way that you were praying, and then all of a sudden these negative thoughts or this negative result comes back in, then the enemy can drop in, yeah, see, your prayers are worthless, you're worthless, you didn't do enough, and also that God that you're praying to isn't worth praying to, because obviously he didn't respond.
It's interesting how closely linked those two things are, how we view ourselves and how we view God.
Yeah.
They're closely linked. In the sense that if I feel worthless, then I feel like God's maybe unworkable, or God's not doing his part, or God's whatever. Or maybe the narcissist is, I'm always right, and God's just an idiot, or maybe God doesn't exist. And that's where a lot of, I think, the real self-focused personalities to survive have to end up.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be a horrible, if God really exists, and I've done all this praying, and he hasn't done what I thought, then I'm really a cruddy person, so I'd rather get to the point that God doesn't exist and I can go on from there, which isn't very fulfilling either.
No.
Oh my gosh. I would so much rather believe that God is so much more brilliant than me, and that I could ask for things. As Job said, who's the biggest disappointed guy in the book, I was thinking about things too wonderful for me to understand. Now, to me, that's whenever the revelation of God shows up in any of my circumstances, pain, whatever, that's where I land. Wow, this was more wonderful than I could wrap my head. So I'm over here judging you for not doing your part. You're doing something more wonderful than I can take in. And I'm sure you would explain that to me if I was capable of understanding it. And I'm not capable of understanding it. So you're willing to just keep walking down that road and let me discover that you are trustworthy and you have a better plan about everything, and not everything for you culminates in this world like it does for me. I've got a time frame on anything I'm praying about. It's got to be resolved in this world to my benefit. And God's taking the long game. God's going, you know what? This is only the vapor of smoke. This is the dew on the grass. You weren't created for this. You were created for something else so much better. I mean, I was with a woman last week that got a very serious illness at a very young age and may not live long. And has faced their own mortality every day. And the courage with which she lives, it just astounds me. And what she's been through and how she's fought back. And I just go, oh my gosh, most people I know, older adults I know, are already collapsing under the weight of that. She's 22 and finding a way to navigate it, not only for herself, but with a grace for others around her that just, man, I came away going, I want more of that. That's such great courage and great engagement with God. And she looked at me and said, I don't know if I've got 6 days, 6 months, or 60 years. I don't know. But I'm going to live each day with him and as much as he gives me. And I loved it. I'm challenged by people like that. I love it.
I mean, that would be a person that I would love to ask, like, so what do you think about in the day? Like, what's going through your mind? What are the regular conversations that you're having to have, you know, to have that level of courage and to get up in the morning and say, you know what, I don't know how many days I have left, but I want to live this day to the best of my ability. And to do that with courage and relentlessness that is awe-inspiring. It's like, okay, what kind of internal dialogue are you having? And what do you genuinely believe about yourself and about God?
Wow. Well, if she was here, we could ask her, but she's not, Kyle. So,
well, hopefully sometime you or I will have the opportunity to ask her that.
Well, we all know people like that, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's a great question some of us could ask people who are on the fringes of the mortality, in the uncertainty of things that we vest so much security in, and they don't have it all. That'd be a great conversation, not for us to have with her, but for all of us to have with people like that, you know, people who are exhibiting great courage in the face of great need, and just saying, man, how do you get through? What do you think about every day? What is it that picks you up out of what you could easily surrender to the pain of the circumstance you're in, and no one would blame you? No one.
Easily. Yep. Absolutely.
And yet you find enough to even struggle against great physical pain, to get up and go do something for someone else, to benefit someone else. I mean, it's just almost always true that people in pain really appreciate the pain that other people experience. And people who don't know pain or don't know very significant pain oftentimes lack empathy, compassion for people, but people who know it don't. People who are poor have great compassion for people who are poor. They just do. And sometimes people who are wealthy just kind of, you know, pity the poor or ignore the poor or whatever, because they just... And they always say, in the face of need, poor people will give more in terms of money, rates of money, percentages, than rich people will ever give, because they understand.
You know, thinking back to Brené Brown, I mean, I feel like this is what Brené Brown is talking about when she talks about the people who live wholehearted lives. You know, the people that live from that place. And, you know, I love the research that she's done and evaluating, like, okay, what makes you tick? Like, what makes you get up in the day excited about life and excited to be there, to engage and to show up and allow yourself to be seen? She talks about how everybody that she talked to when she was doing that research that she qualified as wholehearted had lives that, I mean, would bring you to tears. Yeah. They had faced major opposition and major trial. It wasn't like they had a scot-free life. By any means.
What do you find you saying to yourself at times? I mean, you've been through some painful things in your life. What do you find yourself saying to you that kind of invites you into better space?
I think it depends on the situation. Recently, the statement that I've been saying to myself a lot is actually a statement that I got from Rob Bell. It goes, I'm not playing that game. And it's this idea that God has done so much work in my life to free my heart from living at the pace and to the drumbeat of other people's brokenness, that to allow myself to fall back into that, or to move back into that space where I allow that to be authority in my life again, man, it would just be nullifying or strangling the life that God has been doing and freeing up in me. And so that statement of I'm not playing that game has been a very encouraging mantra lately. You know, there's been a lot that God's used over my life, but recently that's the most current one.
Yeah. For me, I just begin to rehearse who God is. Begin to, you know, whether it's to get out in nature and look at the immensity of the creation, the variety of creation, the leaves on the trees, the sky, the stars, if it's night. To me, it's the immensity of creation and my awareness that if a God who made it all and then entered it through his son to redeem me out of whatever. And I think that's where Paul gets to in Romans 8, doesn't he? Where he says, if God didn't spare his only son, but freely gave him up for us all, how would he deny us anything we need for life and godliness? And now I know that nothing can separate me from the love of God. So Romans 8 is one that I just kind of start walking through and I call my heart out of. I mean, I've been in places in the last, not in the last year or so, but maybe in the last six, seven, 8 years, of really being down in the gutter and feeling like, man, I'm going to lose everything. And it's just, and I've even got the place of even if worst case scenario happens, God's still my God. And I put all my hope in him. And if it's beyond the veil that all this stuff gets worked out, I'm going to be okay with that. And I can actually feel myself call my heart to that. There's times when David does that in the Psalms. Bless the Lord, oh my soul, and all that. It's like, come on, we're going to do this. Or Jesus saying, count it all joy when you fall into these kinds of sufferings and persecutions, exclusions, lies, deceits. Count it all joy because God does an amazing work in the extremities of the world, which is not to say God causes those extremities. I think the chaos of creation, the chaos of fallen creation, causes all the extremities we need, if we needed any. And God is able to work in the brokenness of creation. Because the same emails I get from people saying, I have been through the worst experience of my life over the last 10 months, end up getting to, maybe not in the first month, second month, fourth month, but somehow 10, 12 months down the road, I've never been closer to him than I am today. I've never been more certain of him than I am today. And the circumstances are still unresolved. I think, Tim, it's the hardest year of their life. But the relationship with God has grown so much. And God knows that too. Not that we need the bad, but the bad, the difficult unmoors our affections from the things in this life that don't count. And if they're unchallenged, it seems like we just keep vesting our joy in the wrong things, in the stuff the enemy can steal, kill, and destroy. And not set our hearts up above where things are in Christ and good and godly, even in the most despicable pain and even in the most dire of tragedies and even the most hopeless situations, if God means anything, it's peace that passes understanding. It's peace greater than anybody can understand from look at circumstance. It's hope in the midst of hopelessness. And it's that being at rest in him, even to the point of our greatest extremity. But I do think there's a calling that we do. I call my heart out of those places. I've been talked out of those places with brothers that I love deeply. I can get with and say, man, I'm really struggling with this, 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 and just listen to them as they begin to invite me into what's really true, not in what only appears to be true in the moment.
And that's the beauty of community that knows you well. You know, I have a group of men that I do life with, and then my wife is also a part of that group that – man, to be able to speak into your life when you're really struggling and when your vision has gotten kind of tunneled down and you need other people to speak into that and to remind you of those truths, right? That's why Jesus was constantly saying, write it on your forehead, write it wherever you need. I mean, put it wherever you need to put it.
And talk about it with each other while you're on the way. Yeah. This is the kind of language that I think real community feeds off of. And what I've noticed about God is in a pool of people, he doesn't let everybody at the same time all go through very difficult stuff. There's people got their feet on the ground, a little better off, that are the encouragers at a time when others need it. And then the time will come when they'll need it and other folks will be in a place of being able to encourage.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would encourage, I love you brought this up, Kyle. I think it behooves us to help people be encouraged to not give themselves to the darkness. Don't give in to the worthless stuff. Find your way out of that stuff because it's not mm-hmm. true. You are worthy of love and the Father has deemed you so because of who he made you to be. And yeah, maybe a lot of life has twisted that. And maybe a lot of even choices you've made has twisted that. But God never lose sight of what, like I do with my kids and my grandkids, you never lose sight of what's really there, no matter what bad choice they're making, no matter what they're going through at the moment, you never lose sight of the gift of that life.
Yeah.
And that's what we keep calling to the fore.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.